episode number 57 of the ETPHD team podcast with myself and Anna. Hi Anna, how are you?
Hello, I am good, thank you. Good, feeling a lot more relaxed with Wi-Fi in the house. How about you?
You look relaxed with your shiny new glasses on.
Thanks, I feel it. And I've not even had any wine yet, so.
Neither have I, good team. Oh, I'm proud. I made a special point of having a tea instead of wine this evening. I don't know what my logic was there. I'm having one of those weeks. You know when you have those weeks where your wine consumption just goes up a little bit more? You know, normally I'm like a glass every other night or sometimes every night. This week I'm like a glass every night minimum, maybe another glass. And then I think, okay, no, enough is enough. I think that's why I'm having my tea tonight, to prove that I can do it.
Yeah, can't relate, to be fair. Clearly. The fact that I'm celebrating, it's 20 past seven on a Thursday and I've not had a wine yet.
Oh no, I'm sorry, this is who we are. I am well, thank you. I am managing a delightful bout of menstrual cramps, which is just filling me with joy. Oh, my friend this morning texts me and I said, we both track our cycles and we talk about all everything, and I texted her this morning and I said, woohoo, I'm bleeding, and she was like, congratulations my friend, we've made it through another month. And I thought, we are those friends that celebrate every month we get a period and we're like, well done, you've done it,
we've made it.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of honesty I like in my life, and gratitude that I like in my life. Just you've had a successful period and you haven't killed anyone during PMS. You're doing well. I mean,
it's always a bonus.
It is. Always. I feel like we should celebrate this more. You know, we talk about periods and the side effects of periods all the time, but it is like, do you know what? Well done, body, because that hurts. And especially when you get into your 30s and PMS is literally raging. You think, great.
I can't wait for this.
I can't wait for you to reach it and experience it for yourself. And then you'll be like, you were just making that up. I would like to say, though, that this is very anecdotal, of course, but I got my second vaccine a few weeks ago, and both times I've had my vaccine, my period was bang on the number of days it should be, and it didn't my period at all. Because you've had yours, haven't you?
I've had mine, and they've been... this is the thing with me. I can't honestly say whether it's the vaccine or life stresses that's affected things. They have been a little bit different and a little bit later. So
it could be either.
Yeah, it could be a multitude of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, that's the thing. Some of my clients have reported that theirs have been off or they've been really ill and their period's been like a week late. And you never really know. You can't really tell if it's...
No, that's the thing. I've been very careful because, again, I think people are aware of it. So when clients have had that, I'm like, it could be, but let's not say 100%.
Yeah. The app that I use, Natural Cycles, they are actually logging it. So when you get your vaccine, you type it in, you like hashtag the vaccine name and hashtag vaccine, because, you know, so 2021. I guess they're collating all of the data from all of their users, which will be interesting when that comes out. I mean, it's not like a scientifically robust experiment, but it will be interesting to see if there's trends, especially with different vaccines, just because it's science and it's...
Yeah, that would be very interesting, I have to say.
Yeah, so I had a pleasant experience with that. Okay, nothing's happened this week, nothing wild. Simone Biles.
I was going to say, I think we need to talk Olympics.
We do. I'm intrigued. Okay, so background for people that don't know. Simone Biles is obviously an Olympic gymnast, the best in the world. And she, was it semis she pulled out?
Yes. Yeah.
So she pulled out basically midway through in semis. And then there was a kind of, not an outroar, there was a lot of there was a lot of public declaration of respect for Simone Biles for pulling out for her. What they said was her mental health, and then there have obviously been a lot of people who have been on the other side of things and said that's not what a sportsman does or sportsperson does. She pulled out because she didn't think she was going to win, and my opinion I think has changed slightly on it, but I'm interested in yours.
So I didn't watch the interview. I heard it on the radio, and she said, obviously, because she was doing individual and team, and she said that she felt she'd be letting her teammates down because she wouldn't be able to give her all. Right, obviously taken out of context there, but I think I can't imagine the amount of pressure that they're under, and for her to do that when she's got like the weight of a country's expectations on her and put her mental health first, it's pretty fucking huge. Yeah. And I have a lot of respect for her.
Absolutely. And I think as well, so there's obviously the whole background to the sexual assault claims and the rifeness of sexual assault claims in the Olympics as a whole is enough of a stressor, I would imagine, for anyone. I think that the way she's so eloquent and the way she communicated it was great in the press conference. I think that, I don't know if there was enough reference made to what was going on. I think this is why there's been a bit of a backlash. What's been taken completely out of context was similar to what you just said, was her saying, I knew that I couldn't perform my best, so I pulled out. And I think if you take that in the context of what it is, that it doesn't surprise me anyway, that there's been such a backlash of people saying, well, you're a sports person and it looks like you've just quit because you weren't going to win. And that's sort of what it is. But if you then take it into the bigger, obviously, the overall context of, if she'd sprained her wrist and pulled out, we wouldn't be saying, what a poor sports person. We would say, that's really unlucky. So why is it different? Because it's mental health. Especially if you imagine when you've got, if you're having mental health issues and you are about to do one of the most dangerous Olympic sports. Imagine flying upside down whilst you're in a really, really poor mental health space. Take away any potential of winning medals. Imagine the risk to your actual health and your life to be in such a negative headspace or a challenging headspace whilst, like you said, with all of the weight on your the world on your shoulders and then having to continue to compete. It's just, I have a lot of respect for her to do it, because I think that she's definitely made a stand, right? Especially like for mental health. I wonder what the narrative would be if it was a man, just because I always wonder what the narrative would be if it was a man versus a woman out of personal interest. I don't know if a man would ever feel at this point comfortable enough to do that, which is really sad.
There was, I can't remember who, but there was an Olympian, he's not at this year's, but he on Twitter fully supported her, said it's amazing what she's done, more people need to be talking about it, the pressures that we're under and the effect it has on our mental health. For someone to make that stand is huge.
Yeah And I think, to be honest, I think most of the narrative around it is positive and supportive. People do like to jump on the soft liberals any chance that they get now. It's because we do have people, I do think we have people that are too soft and too extreme in those views, in my personal opinion. But I think it's a really easy argument for people who are the opposite, and they go, like, just liberals who just are snowflakes, etc. And it's just the first thing that people run to. It's like, I'm not sure that this is the case. That seems to be the general argument, though. But I've seen anyway.
But women in general are smashing it, I have to say. Yes. I have only had basic channels until I've had TV sorted. So it's been a lot of Olympic action. And yeah, I don't know. I know there are a few horse people, but one of the dressage riders is now from the UK, is now the most decorated British athlete.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, I would never have guessed that that would be the sport that was the most decorated. I don't know why, though.
Oh, we're good with horses. We're very good.
Yeah, I don't know why that wouldn't have crossed, I just wouldn't have crossed my mind. Well, that's cool. That's impressive.
Very exciting. And did you see that Pink paid the fines for Norway's volleyball shorts?
No way did she. What a hero.
Yes.
Oh, what a hero. got, oh, goodness.
As if you couldn't love her anymore.
pink. I never appreciated when I was younger. And then the older I get, I listen to her lyrics and I just think, my God, you are fantastic. Like, I wish I gave her more credit when I was younger, but I didn't understand her when I was younger, I think.
Yeah. Oh, no, she's a hero. Always has been.
Oh, she is. Do you know what else I've been binge watching recently? Sex and the City. Oh, I feel I did definitely underrated that when I was younger too. And then as I got older, I kind of did, liked it, but I never really understood it that much until I've watched it.
I was going to say, I think I need to try and get into it because my sister used to watch it and I just had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. I sort of think that I was the same. I mean, obviously I'm quite a bit older than you, but even I was kind of like, not so sure. But now I've started watching it and they're all in their 30s and they're all single and just living their best life. And it's like, I watch it, whenever I watch it, I'll either laugh or cry or laugh cry because I just think, oh my God, you're talking to me right now. It's anyone that's in their, I'd say mid to late 20s and upwards should watch Sex and the City again if you've not watched it recently. So that's my wonderful piece of advice for the day.
Noted. I'm going to get on it.
Okay, let's get on with the questions. I'm going to go first today. Okay. So selfish. Only because they're in front of me. Sometimes I feel like I don't want fat loss bad enough and therefore let my new target and goals slip out of my mind. What do you think the best approach to this mindset is? Which is a great question.
It is.
Anna is pondering.
I am, because I'm like, well, do you need to diet? If you don't need to, then why? Why? Like, it's okay to kind of take some time out, live life, and then come back to it if you want to. But equally, if you're in a healthy body and feeling good and enjoying life, then why? The need just isn't there.
Exactly. That's exactly what I would say. It seems so. This person doesn't need to lose body fat for her health at all. Trains well, socializes well, eats very well in terms of healthful nutrients, etc., etc., and has a good relationship with food. So it's okay to say I don't want it enough. That's not a bad thing. I don't want it enough. That's why I don't diet. I definitely don't want it enough. I can't put the effort in because I don't want to put the effort in. And I think we need to take away the shame of that. There's no shame in not wanting to do something. There's also no shame in changing your mind. That's also absolutely fine. On the flip side of that, one of the ways that we can support successful weight loss and successful weight loss maintenance in general is saying, how does fat loss align with what's important to you? So it's looking at your values, right? But if you say fat loss is not a value, and I think this is really important when you're having discussions or you're thinking about your values, you say aesthetics is your value, and it's like, is that really one of the underpinning things in your life right now that is important for how you live your life, is your body fat level? It might be, but fat loss itself is not a value. So you have to think, okay, so this person, if I said, what's important to you right now? So I'm not going to say what's important to her. I know that she is very good at her job and that socializing is important to her and her family is important to her. And if it was a case of, right, we want to ensure that you progress in fat loss, how does losing body fat allow you to connect more with your family? An example of this would be if you've got somebody who's maybe in a larger body who struggles to go to the park with their kid and run around, and so fat loss aligns for them because they can say, well, all of these behaviors mean that I can go run around with my kid in the park. So that's the hook. That's where we can say, right, this is where we're going to focus on whenever it comes to you making a decision about whether you're going to go to the gym or not, or whether you're going to eat something or not. Say, well, how does this align with what's important? Actually, do you know what? The sooner I do this, the sooner I can go and do this with my child. And that's what you have to think about. So if you're saying it's, you don't, might not want it enough, that might be because it just doesn't align with your values. It might be that, do you know what? I'm in a healthy body. Fat loss right now actually takes me away from everything that's important to me, because it stops me from socializing, reduces my energy at the gym, and distracts me from work because I'm hungry. That's why you don't want it enough, because it doesn't help anything that's important to you in your life. This is not a specific person. This is obviously just an example. So I've had this discussion with a few clients this week, actually. I've said, you know, how does it align with your values? And people say, well, I just really want it right now. But you have to think about, you're not going to be able to do anything if you can't figure out why it's important to you and the grander scheme of your life. So that's all I've got to say on that one.
Right. I'm aiming this one at you, as you may be familiar with this feeling. The pre-period ravenous hunger, how to manage it?
Can't relate at all. So context, some people's BMR goes up about 5 to 15%, which is only about 150 to 250 calories max. So you feel ravenous, you feel insatiable, and you might be craving as well, but you're not, and unfortunately, and you don't actually require that many more calories. So you've got tons of options depending on what your goals are and what your relationship with food is like. So example would be, if you're somebody like me who is just honoring hunger and eating intuitively, I will just eat more. I will do two things. I will make my meals bigger in general. So I know that I don't obviously weigh food, but I know what my oats look like in the morning. I'll just pour some more oats in my bowl, example. Or I will add more volume to my food. So if I'm having a salad, I'll just make sure that I'm having way more of the greens, and just so I'm more like more fibrous food. Just because I'm not dieting doesn't mean that I don't do all of the habits that are useful to help maintain satiety. And usually when I've got PMS, I have an extra meal, to be quite honest. I have an extra bowl of oats or and whey or something, because I'm like hungrier. And allowing yourself that is much easier than saying, oh my God, why am I so hungry? Oh my God, why am I so hungry? Oh my God, I shouldn't be this hungry, over and over and over again. That's not helping anyone. You're hungry because you've got PMS, and that's just what happens to some people. So if you can honor your hunger, if you're dieting, you've got a couple of options where you max out your food volume as much as you can and you maintain the deficit. But if you struggle to stick to it, then you can increase your calories by about 200. But if your hunger is that insatiable, it's probably not going to do much if it's just 200 calories. So up your calories to maintenance for the week and then drop again for the other 3 to 4 weeks. That's a strategy that I would sometimes use with clients, but it depends on what your relationship with food is. Do you notice it yourself?
I don't notice like insatiable hunger. I do get chocolate cravings big time. So for me, it's like you honoring hunger, but I know that it'd take a lot of chocolate to satisfy that craving. So I'm better off kind of including it with a big bowl of oats, because that's actually going to fill me up, but I satisfy the craving for chocolate as well. And I'll just have that a couple of times a day and it does the job.
Yeah, I could eat that right now. And I think it changes every month too. I would say probably last year I was eating a share bar of chocolate a lot of the days in PMS, because that's what I really wanted, and I wasn't looking at my body comp or anything. I wasn't bothered at that point. So I'm not particularly bothered. But whereas now I don't want chocolate at all. I just want food, and it changes over time. I think we have to be so mindful of not expecting something. Don't stop expecting us to be hungry every month, or don't expect to always want chocolate. I had some chocolate last night and I was like, I must want this because I've got PMS. And then I had one bite of it. I was like, I don't really, this is not what I want right now. And then I had some bland hot oats and I was like, this is delicious. So, leave yourself open to all possibilities, but don't stay really hungry and question why you're hungry all the time and just not do anything about it, because you're either going to mindlessly overeat or you're going to be so preoccupied with food that you're not doing anything productive with your day, because you just keep thinking about food and you're getting frustrated all the time. So make a plan or make a decision. Oh, I'm hungrier, I'm going to do something about it. I think Emma and I had a discussion actually recently. Someone said, what do I do if I'm really hungry? She was like, you eat. And even Emma said that, who is predominantly a fat loss coach. But it's, so I get it a lot on Instagram too. It's like, what do I do if I'm really hungry?
It's one of those things that people just always try and ignore it.
Or question
it. Yeah, and you wouldn't question anything else.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we spoke about this, maybe it was on the last podcast. There are certain situations when your hunger regulation might be off if you're very lean, or if you're in a larger body, or certain times that your hunger regulation might be off. But if you're just trying to improve your relationship with food, great, you've noticed your hunger. Let's act on that in a way that is helpful, which is usually a nice big satiating meal of some sort.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, sorry for the long question and thank you in advance. I am on the pill for PMS because I get really bad bloating, fatigue and low mood for 2 weeks before when not on the pill. I did a lot of research into which pill to go on because I've had bad experiences with it before. I found a paper about Yaz or Elwine, looks like Elaine, a low dose combined pill that has been shown to be good for the physical and mental side effects of PMS. I have two questions relating to this. First, I still get the bloating a week before the end of my pill packet and often get a period even if I don't take a pill break. Why would I get bloating before the end of my pill pack if the bloating is normally caused by a fluctuation in hormones? I think that that's not a physiological thing, because unless you're brand new to the pill where your own hormones are still kind of regulating, which may be happening. I don't know the specifics of this. It's quite a medical question. I don't know how long it takes for each pill for your hormones, own hormones to regulate. So there's the potential of that. And I think in the next part of the question, she says, she's been on it for maybe 3-4 months or more than that. So it's probably not that. I would say potentially it might be psychological. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but we do have like a gut-brain axis, and it's not a physical axis, but there are associations between our gut and our brain. And it could be that it's not so much a placebo effect, but you're expecting your period. And so, for example, you might think, you might feel a little bit anxious about your period coming. That might be impacting your sleep. These types of things can impact your bloating and your digestion. And there could be a bit of a placebo effect. I think this is me not being a doctor in this. I think it's more likely to be psychological than it is to be physiological if you've been on the pill for a long time, because your hormones are not fluctuating. You are getting a consistent dose of hormones. So I can't think why realistically that would happen. But like I say, I'm open to be wrong there. That's from what I know in terms of that nutrition study. But there's another part of this question. I felt really great mentally on this pill for the first 3 months, and then my mental health started to go downhill. Do you think this could have been because of the pill, even if I had been fine on it for 3 months? I'm not sure if these questions are too detailed. No, the best thing to do is with this type of thing is to speak to your doctor, of course, but it could be to do with the pill. It could also be to do with so many other factors that will have changed in that 3 month period. I don't know what was going on in your life. People do, so you can find that people are on the pill for a very long time and then they come off it and they notice changes in their mood and they feel better. So you would think by that, by proxy, that their mood had been affected long term on the pill, and then when they came off it, their mood regulated again for some people. So it could well be that it just took some time for things to change. And yes, if you potentially came off it, you might see changes in mood again and come back to where you were before. But it could, like I said, it could be so many other factors. So I think it's important to look at everything else that was going on around those times and just think, is that the only thing that changed? Is that the only thing in my life that changed? If so, and your sleep was good, everything else was great, your job was good, everything else, then maybe it could be pill related. But I would kind of look at it from a place of exclusion rather than, it's really easy to go to the thing that we know that we changed. That's kind of like when you see people who go plant-based or go vegetarian and they see all of these different, like they see weight loss and they go, well, it's because I went vegetarian that I got weight loss. It's like, is it? Or is it because actually when you went vegetarian, you started exercising more and you started just having more healthful habits because going vegetarian for you was something that made you feel like you were a more healthy individual, and then you started doing all these other things without even recognizing that that was what was going on? So it's always good to reflect on these things and think, like, what else could it possibly be? And I'm sorry that's not more of a definitive answer. I don't know the ins and outs of the physiology of those pills, but hopefully it's a little bit helpful.
So I think this was from a client of George's. Does your body swell in hot weather? I always feel like my thighs swell so much when it's hot, and I'm wondering if this is just in my head or if this is something that happens physiologically.
My God, did you get chafe last week? I got bad chafe last week.
I'm not gonna lie.
I've still got a thing. I'm just gonna look. Oh yeah, I've still got it. It's like a rough little rash now on the inside of my legs. Oh, why does it hurt so much?
It's just unavoidable, isn't it?
Like, I'm like, why would I put chafe under my boobs? Oh, I know why.
What are you like? I have the world's, well, no, they're not the world's smallest, but there's not a lot there, and even then I was like, why are they sweating too? What is going on?
But I also don't understand the logic from that, because I think my thighs are sweating, my whole area is sweating. Why are my thighs not gliding against each other? No, they're just jamming against each other and burning up every time I walk. Oh goodness.
When you have to like peel them away from each other. Oh
God, I went to get my nails done and then I stood up, and I think I'd got a pedicure and my nails done at that point, and I stood up and I had stuff in my hands, and the whole seat, it was like a puddle, and he saw it, and there was nothing I could do because I didn't have any free hands, and I was like, sorry. Oh God. The question was, does your body swell up? So you do get, what happens in the heat, the way that sweating works is that your blood vessels dilate to try and release heat. And so your blood goes to certain areas of your body. It's usually like your hands and your feet, your ankles, to try and release heat. So that's probably what it is that you're feeling, even in your legs. It's just your body is trying to release heat. Think about where you sweat. So do you sweat between your legs? I sweat between my legs. Your blood vessels are dilating to sweat out, and so that can lead to swelling, because if you think that your blood is like volume, so your blood, your volume of that area will increase, so that's what the swelling is. So yeah, that's why we all get it.
Delightful.
Isn't it? I'll take that though, just for some sunshine, to be quite honest.
Oh God, definitely.
You've just reminded me to bring Vaseline when I go away, actually. That is the best chief medicine, isn't it? Like Vaseline.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know.
I'm going away next week, hopefully if all things work. To Kos, and it's 38 degrees this week. There's a weather warning.
Oh, I would take that.
I know. Well, that's if it stays on the amber list or not goes on to the amber plus. Otherwise, we're going to somewhere else. I can't remember where it was. Clients have no fear. I'm not taking that off as a holiday in terms of check-ins anyway. I know, 38. Imagine my thighs in that temperature.
Yeah, you've been to Cali in like summertime.
I know. But last year when I went to Kos was when I had factor 25 on or something. But I had a lot going on in my hormones at the time, and I just went out in the sun for like a few hours, and my whole front went bright red. I had to wear a swimsuit for 3 days. It's very irresponsible at 30. That point, 33 years old.
Oh, what I'd do for some sun.
I know. Sorry. Okay. That's the same question. That was one of Lynn's clients who asked that, I think. God. Okay, next question. How to set boundaries and not have people treat you as a doormat? Also, getting the courage to set those boundaries in the first place. Oh. She's pondering again. She's pondering.
I am. So, like, setting boundaries is... I think you have to be quite brave to do it, don't you? And I think once you do that, you then have the courage to be like, well, actually, these people are pushing my boundaries and that's not okay.
Mm.
So I think once you've done that first step, the awareness of people not treating you well is there, and you can stand up for yourself a bit more easily.
Yeah, the first time is the hardest time, 100%. But the more you do it, the more practice you get at it, the easier it gets, like you were saying. I think a really nice way of framing it, I think that can be really helpful, is saying, when you're not setting that boundary, what you're saying is,
it's okay to treat me like that.
It's okay to treat me like that. How you feel and what you need is more important than what I feel and what I need. So if I was texting Anna every night at 9 o'clock at night when she finished, she doesn't, but if she you finish work at five, I was texting you every night at 9 o'clock, and you didn't tell me, look, I'm not, and you kept replying to me, and you didn't tell me that you were, that, you know, it's okay if you need to chat to me. It's not okay that to text me at 9 o'clock because I'm not working at that time. Then what she's technically doing is saying, do you know what, Amelia's needs are more important than mine. And of course they're not. And I would be mortified if I found out that Anna thought that I was more important than she was. I would be mortified by that. And so every time you don't set a boundary, what you're saying is, that person is more important than me. Their health, their life, their opinions are more important than mine. And that's why setting boundaries is so hard if you're trying to improve your self-worth or your self-esteem, because you have to identify that you are worth enough to set the boundaries. And that's why it's so scary, because for a lot of people, especially those who work with us, and I don't know this person specifically in the self-worth side of things, but for a lot of people who do this work, we don't necessarily have the greatest self-worth at this point, or self-esteem. And so boundaries is like, oh, it's really awkward, because, oh, I'm going to actually have to say that what I feel is important. But what you feel is so important. And boundaries, having a lack of boundaries is one of the key things that's related to emotional eating and overeating. Because if you don't have any boundaries in place, again, Anna could be proper chill from 5 p.m. watching her TV, doing absolutely nothing, and in a great place. And then I message her and say, do you know what? I need you to do this by tomorrow. I mean, I don't know what that would be, but if I did, and then Anna's like, I feel really anxious and I feel really stressed. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to deal with my feelings. I'm going to eat. And again, all hypothetical. It's not going to happen. But a lack of boundaries is such an underrated space to look at in terms of overeating. So it's really great that this person is asking about it and thinking about putting them in place. That something we spoke about on the podcast before was the Brené Brown method of setting boundaries, and it's just phrasing it like, it's okay, but it's not okay. So example with this would be, if you're eating at the dinner table with your family and you're so fed up because your mum keeps commenting on everything that you're eating, and it's really frustrating you, and you've not set a boundary there, so you're just getting more and more resentful. Usually if you feel resentful, it's because you've not set a boundary and you've not communicated that. You can't hold something against someone if you've not told them that it bothers you in the first place. That's not fair. So a situation like that, you can say, mum, do it not at the time, but do it when you're in a calm, nice space with your mum and you're sitting watching TV, and you can say, do you know what, mum, it's totally okay that you care about my health and my body or whatever, but it's not okay for you to comment on what I eat at the dinner table. I feel quite uncomfortable when you do that, so please don't do that. And I think that's very non-aggressive. It's very polite. It's not putting your mum out. It's not attacking her. It's saying, I understand that this is coming from a place of care, but this is not okay. And Anna could say to me, do you know what? It's okay that you need me to do this work, but it's just not okay for you to text me at 9 o'clock because I finished work at five, and we've had this discussion before. And I'd say, fair, I forgot about that. I'll start messaging you at five. And they are uncomfortable. Nobody really likes to do it. No one likes to say, do you know what? I'm more important than you in this situation. It's uncomfortable, especially as women, because we're told that we have to be nice all the time and be selfless all the time and put everyone else first all the time. Oh, patriarchy. But nothing's going to change unless we start taking action and show up for ourselves. And I think that's boundaries, is how you show up for yourself. That was such a waffle.
It was a good waffle, you know.
I love a good, I could eat a good waffle right now. Potato waffle.
Oh, yes. They always get forgotten about.
Oh, I've got them in my freezer. I've had them in my freezer actually. Oh. Our family is, our comfort food is waffles, beans and egg. Oh.
Oh. Yeah. Stomach rumbling now.
I thought that kind of way where you're like really, really bloated with period, but you're also really hungry. So you just are feeling a bit perplexed about what to do. That's usually a day for chocolate. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. How to deal with comfort eating when feeling anxious?
How to deal with comfort eating? The key is kind of in the question, in the sense of what is awesome is that this person has identified that they feel anxious and that's when they overeat. That's the first hardest part, is to recognize why you're overeating. If you don't do the work to figure out why, then you're never going to be able to stop overeating. So that's the first thing. Well done for figuring that part out. I would say, what are your current coping strategies for feeling anxious? Make a list. What do you do when you feel anxious, aside from eating? Sometimes I ask that question to clients and they say, well, I don't have any. This is the key. So make a list of a couple of things that will support you if you're feeling anxious. And that might be Sex in the City. It might be going for a walk. It might be your latest thing from Love Honey. Whatever it is, make a list. And then the next, you can be a bit more complicated with it, and you can set like an implementation intention where you say, if I feel anxious, then I will, and write these implementation intentions out. And what's more than just writing them out is actually, when you listen to this podcast, when you finish, sit down, make the list, and sit down for 10 minutes and run yourself through that implementation. Close your eyes and visualize it. Visualize yourself feeling anxious, and visualize yourself then walking through what you're going to do when you feel anxious. And the visualization part is really important. And then get going about your day. And then the next time you feel anxious, you can say, oh, I made that implementation intention. If I feel this, then I'm going to do this. And so what happens is you've already got a strategy in place and you're not stuck in the moment and thinking, what else am I going to do? I just need to go and run outside or do something different. And you're not overwhelmed. You can just say, the pause is really hard. The pause is the second hardest part, where you go, I feel anxious, I'm going to stop for a second, and then I'm going to make my decision. That takes practice. That what comes with being more mindful. Meditation is really great for that. And like having a, like trying to take maybe 3 deep breaths before you eat, putting that into place just day to day, just taking 3 deep breaths before you eat is a really good way to center yourself. And then you get into the habit of doing it, and once you've managed to center yourself and ground yourself, it's a lot easier then to say, hey, this is the action that I need to take that's going to support me.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Okay. Does alcohol play a part in disordered eating, i.e. overeating when drunk and when hungover?
I think they're both very normal things to happen. It's not a sign of disordered eating by any means.
Yeah. But
you're not going to be as mindful because you're drunk and cravings might be sky high and you might want all the carbs when you're hungover. That's, again, just one of the things that happens as a consequence of drinking, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think when you're actually drunk, if you think when you're actually drunk, it lowers your inhibitions. So of course you're going to be, you might be hungrier, but you're less inhibited. So you're going to eat what's in front of you, what's accessible to you. Often you're in a social situation, so you're probably going to eat more than you usually would. And like you said, you're going to be less mindful because you're under the influence. That's totally normal. What you might find is, if you find that you are really overly mindlessly eating and overeating maybe excessively, you might find that actually day to day you're restricting. And so when you get drunk, you are really hungry and you are just less mindful because you've lowered that inhibition. You don't have the control that you have outside of that. So it's not the alcohol that's leading you to or contributing to disordered eating. It's the restriction before that, and then you drink alcohol and then you go a little bit OTT because you've been restricting. So that's one thing. And then I suppose the next day, like you said, it's completely normal to probably crave carbs and eat differently. I think that's really quite normal. I would say if you're feeling hungover, what's the word? Beer fear. Like if you're feeling that kind of guilt or shame or paranoia the next day, then it can play into your disordered eating because you don't want to feel those things. And then it comes back to what we normally talk about in terms of suppression, and you eat to suppress those feelings of those feelings from the night before. And so it can play a role in that. I think alcohol, it's funny, alcohol's a funny one because people blame it for a lot of things. I actually think something I realized when I started drinking red wine was red wine really helps me be more mindful when I eat dinner, because it just brings out so many more flavors. And actually when you have, like, that's alcohol, but when you make an occasion out of a meal with a glass of wine and you know, it might be a social meal, it might not be, you naturally become more mindful because you're just more present and you're less judgmental. But then obviously if you're drinking, I don't know, 20 Blue Wickeds on a Saturday night, that's going to have a slightly different effect. So I think, yeah, I mean, it's all personal. God, do you remember those days?
I do. I was just remembering when you were talking about, obviously, your inhibitions being lower. I'm quite quiet and I don't really go out of my way and talk to people. I mean, I'd say I'm friendly, but you know, Echoes, you'll be familiar with that fine establishment.
This is a Loughborough club that you will all choose to, because you there's a potential that if you stick to the floor and then you could lose a shoe.
But yeah, I must have been when I was like 18, 19, I used to go out and do fun things. I stole a guy's pizza outside Echoes, like a full pizza, the box and all, just walked off with it. I was like, I'd stood talking to him and then was like, yeah, bye, I'm really hungry.
Did he let you?
Yeah, well, I ate it.
Taxi home. Your little face get away with absolute murder. Oh, good times. Well, I used to get when I was in Dundee, and I used to really, really restrict. I was really lean. Anytime I went out a lot, but every time I went out, I would not just get one chips and cheese box, but two boxes of chips and cheese on the way home and eat them both because I was so starving every time. So, I mean, at least I bought them for myself though.
Oh, yeah. I've got nothing to.
Good times. Do you have any more questions?
I have one that I don't know if you'll have an answer to.
Oh, pressure is real.
But it's been asked by a few people. And it is, any plans for a group meet and or photos?
Yes, there's 100% plans for a group meet. They are in the works, but because of COVID and everything, they've just been on the back burner. But yes, 100% before the end of the year there will be. What that's going to look like, I don't know. I am at the moment not swaying towards a photo shoot. There will be photos, but at the moment I'm swaying to something a bit more body neutral. However, I am open to suggestions. So if anyone who is a client is listening to this and thinks, you know, I really like to do X or Y, stick in the Facebook group and let us know.
I was gonna say, we'll put up a thread in the Facebook group.
Because I've not made any decisions. That's just the way that I'm leaning right now. But obviously there will be lots of photo evidence of it. But the shoot was great before, and it wasn't a diet shoot. It was for some people. So it's not off the table. But yeah, I've just been holding off for COVID, but it's going to be in place soon. So if you do have any thoughts, get it on the Facebook group. Cool. Keep your questions coming, please. And thanks, Anna.
Thank you.